You're listening to Gloria Minot Presents.
Chief Legal Officer for the District of Columbia, Attorney General Carl Racine, relies on his 25 years of legal and leadership experience to advise the mayor and district agencies, defend the city in court, and use the law to advance the public interest. He joins me this morning to talk about the work he has done, the work he envisions doing in the future, and, of course, what he thinks about being the first elected Attorney General for the district. Attorney General Racine, good morning. Welcome back.
It's an honor to speak with you, Gloria. As you know, I'm a longtime fan of yours personally.
Thank you.
And a subscriber to many of WPFW's programs.
No question. All across the board, you do subscribe. So tell me, Mr. Attorney General, what have you accomplished so far?
Well, you know, I think we've had a really good 3.5-year run. And look, all credit goes to exceptional staff led by my Chief Deputy, Natalie Ludoway. Let me tick off some wins, I think, for the District of Columbia. First, the Office of Attorney General was told to become independent, not by any elected official, but instead by the residents of the District of Columbia, who voted overwhelmingly in a grassroots initiative to change the office's structure from that of a subordinate attorney general working inside, essentially, the mayor's office, to that of an independent office of attorney general that would be elected and thereby would be directly accountable to the residents of the District of Columbia. You might recall that early in our tenure, our independence was challenged, which now, in hindsight, does not seem like that was a surprise that something like that could happen. What's most important is that the Office of Attorney General survived that attempt to take away our independence.
Yes.
And has thrived ever since. So, number one, what the people wanted was independence. I think we've given them that. Second, we've really prioritized our work in regards to juvenile justice. Our simple philosophy is that as the gatekeepers to the juvenile justice system, the OAG has exclusive jurisdiction over the prosecution of juveniles in the District of Columbia, that it would be wise for us to exercise our prosecutorial discretion in a smart way that actually reduces recidivism and helps young people get back on the right direction. In 3.5 years, we have created a program where we worked really well with the Department of Human Services, a terrific manager named Hillary Tarrant. We have treated kids outside of the system in sizable numbers. 2,000 kids have been diverted away from the criminal justice system, getting the kind of services that they need in order to build resilience and overcome some of the deficits that brought them into the criminal justice system. I'm happy to report that in 3 years, we have diverted over 2,000 young people, and 78% of those young kids who completed our diversion program have not been rearrested. Only, I think it's 7% of the kids who've completed the program have been rearrested and, in fact, found to have been involved in the subsequent offense. In short, our program is working. It's making district residents safer, and it absolutely is putting young people in a better position to be successful and independent without any engagement in criminal law. So we're very proud about that. The third area that we focused on is to really fight hard against slumlords in the District of Columbia. There are slumlords in the District of Columbia. I want to be clear. Most big landlords in D.C. are following the law, but the few or some that are not are doing it in an egregious way that hurts our most vulnerable residents, seniors, and folks who just don't have the economic means to organize a fight against these slumlords. We have brought lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit, and the D.C.'s largest slumlord has recently agreed to leave the D.C. market and not return for 7 years. Hmm. In addition, we've returned monies to residents in these buildings to the tune of 75% of the rent that they paid to the slumlord that was not providing any service. Residents, for example, at Terrace Manor on average, have received and are receiving an average of $9,500 as a result of our actions. I do want to say that it's not the Office of Attorney General alone. We've partnered with pro bono law firms, as well as wonderful grassroots groups like the Washington Clinic, Legal Clinic for the Homeless, So Others May Eat, and others. But bringing the full weight of the District of Columbia government onto slumlords is important, and we're going to continue to be right at it. Lastly, Gloria, if I could, I'd let the D.C. residents know that we share their values, and of course we're very concerned about what's coming out of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And for that reason, the Office of Attorney General of the District of Columbia has joined Democratic colleagues throughout the country, and we've brought a litany of suits and been successful in those suits against President Trump's policy as well as his administration. Examples of those suits include the suit against the Muslim travel ban. We're fighting right now in a lawsuit contesting the ability of the Secretary of Commerce to insert a citizen's question into a census questionnaire. We're fighting on behalf of so-called sanctuary cities, and we're fighting Mr. Trump, President Trump, at all fronts. I do want to highlight one suit. The one suit I want to highlight is the case that Attorney General Brian Frosch of Maryland and the District of Columbia have filed against Donald Trump for violating the Constitution's Emoluments Clause. That clause, the Emolument Clauses, those clauses, I should say, are our country's first anti-corruption law, and they fundamentally make illegal the profiting from government service by a federal officer. And I have to say, as our complaint lays out, that's exactly what's going on at 1600.
No question. You just look up each day and you see something new where you don't know where his business begins and where the office of the president ends. You have no distinction between the two.
I was going to say that's exactly right. I think the facts there and the law are in our favor. What is going on and why people ask, they say, well, why are you doing this? The Attorney General in Maryland, why are you all doing this? Well, we're doing it because there seems to be a pandemic of silence and complicity in this country right now, particularly around the House of Representatives and the Senate. People are being silent by the Trump administration. And I think that the Trump administration quite cleverly and dastardly is essentially paying off people, if you will, to be quiet. What do I mean? Well, Paul Ryan, as we know, is a devout Catholic. And he has talked about his faith, and he's talked about wanting to help people of different backgrounds, races, and whatnot. The reason why we don't hear Paul Ryan's voice when President Trump is calling whole groups of people S-holes or animals is because what President Trump did was Trump gave Paul Ryan and others what they had been wanting for a long time, which was a humongous transfer of wealth from middle and less middle people, poor people, to the wealthy in the form of a tax cut. Well, when Trump does something like that, the string is attached. And what's attached is no check and balance, but silence. The Democratic Attorney General, we're not going to be silent. We're going to file suit, and it's the federal judiciary that's going to ultimately hold Mr. President Trump accountable.
You know, when I think of Paul Ryan, I always remember him as an Ayn Rand disciple who does not have a lot of empathy for poor people. Ayn Rand, as we all know, wrote Atlas Shrugged and The Fountainhead. And so whatever he doesn't surprise me, not at all.
You know, it doesn't, but when you have a track record of speaking about your faith, and then all of a sudden that track record of speaking, maybe not acting, even that has stopped, you have to wonder, what is it? And again, I think President Trump brilliantly, in a dastardly way, is buying off silence. Another example, the oil and gas industry. The oil and gas industry in America does so much business abroad. They actually have diverse workforces and interact globally in a way that many Americans do not. they also understand the benefit of immigration and inclusion. Yet, for the right to continue to drill anywhere they want, they've been quieted.
And finally, quickly, what you envision for a next term, and just a little bit about what you did for funeral homes, about funeral homes in your tenure.
Sure. Let me talk about the funeral homes issue. What we did was we conducted a survey of funeral homes based on complaints that we were receiving from D.C. residents about whether, you know, the cost of a casket was appropriate. And what we found was that the funeral homes in the District of Columbia varied really broadly in the manner in which they had advertised their services, in the manner in which they provided consumers choice. Consumers should have the choice as to whether they choose casket A or casket B. But consumers should also have the choice to use a casket C or D that the funeral home may not be offering, but is more appropriate for them, either in style or in cost. And what we found was that the practices were so random that they confused or misrepresented their services to consumers. So we went in and we investigated several funeral homes. We shut down two of them. And then we worked with the overwhelming majority of really responsible funeral homes to put together a document that more accurately discusses or sets forth what is mandatory charge by law and what is not, so that consumers who are going through a period of grief at least have the facts necessary to make wise economic decisions. In terms of what's going forward at the Office of Attorney General next, we're working really hard on violence reduction. We have been champions of getting D.C. grassroots organizations involved in getting into the community and really trying as best they can to persuade folks who are involved in criminality to stop it. The second, to identify those folks who are involved in criminality and actually offer them opportunities to get out of that business with the appropriate educational certificates or workforce development. And then third, championing and supporting communities who are outraged and petrified at the dramatic increase in violence that we're experiencing in the District of Columbia today. You'll see a lot more on that front. And then lastly, I want to say that you'll see a lot of work in regards to protecting seniors. Personally, as you might know, my mother, Dr. Marie Racine, is an extraordinary human being. She fell ill, had a stroke.
Yes.
What that stroke allowed my sister and I to experience was a bird's-eye view into how insurance companies, hospitals, skilled nursing facilities, and others treat seniors and folks who are sick. We think that based on our experience, and we've heard from a whole lot of other people, that whole area merits study, review, investigation, and where necessary, enforcement.
Attorney General for the District of Columbia, Carl A. Racine, all the best, and thank you for joining me this morning, my friend.
Thank you so much, Gloria.
All right, take care.
For more information about Gloria Might Not Presents, go to Gloria Might Not Presents, one word,